Back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Apocalyptic scenes continue to come out of the Gaza Strip, where Israel has continued with its massacring and murdering of Palestinian civilians. There are heavy street battles between the Israeli regime forces and Hamas fighters, in one incident of which around 60 Israeli soldiers were taken out. Meanwhile, it appears that Israeli regime forces are trying to corner Palestinians in the south towards Rafah to then push them into Egypt. In this edition of the program, we will look at the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, now over 60 days old, and where this war may be heading. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of the program. Deborah Resvi is a political analyst joining us from London. Also joining us, Ali Salam, editor-in-chief at the Basira Press, who joins us from Tehran. Welcome to you both. So I'll start with you, Deborah Resvi, if I may. We're still taking a look at the horrific scenes that are coming out of the Gaza Strip in terms of the deaths that are occurring. And it's been so many in such an accelerated pace that in the past days or so, it has come into light the fact that there is a program that's AI-generated by the name of Gospel that, to make a long story short, it feeds information at a much higher pace to basically murder Palestinians. There used to be a time where it was 50 per year that Israel was able to target. Now it's 100 per day, of which they've gone after 50% of it. And that may explain why, for example, Israel would say we've targeted 600 Hamas targets in a span of 24 hours. All of this has led to, obviously, the genocide and the carnage. And this may be courtesy of somehow U.S. involvement also. What do you think about that?
Hello, good evening. Thank you very much for your invitation. Firstly, condolences to all the martyrs' families in Gaza, in the West Bank, and also southern Lebanon. And of course, the supplications for those who have survived with immense injuries. Look, what you've got to look at, the last 60 days have clearly shown that the Zionist entity has broken all records. They have bombed hospitals at an astronomical level. They've destroyed libraries. They've destroyed bakeries. It's a record-breaking genocide that is taking place in such a short space of time. The number of children that has been killed, that's a record-breaking aspect. The women that has been murdered, that's a record-breaking. So really, Israel is topping the list of breaking all records historically that have existed since the Second World War in any kind of war. So what one has to really analyze is that how is this particular entity able to get away with? Because, of course, we all know and all the analysts have been sort of pointing out for the last 60 days that it has an open-ended support from Washington, from London, from Paris, and some other European countries. So that's one, they're able to get away because they get military support continuously. New funds are being made available by Washington for the Zionist entity to continue its abhorrent genocide in front of our eyes, in our hands, on our mobiles. We can see that's taking place. Secondly, it also provides cover diplomatically, because as we have seen for the last 60 days, that demands for ceasefire has not been sort of implemented because obviously support is there. Then, of course, the media support that the Zionist entity gets, their sort of mouthpieces, their spokesmen and spokeswomen and their ambassadors come on television, on legacy media, continuously lying. Plus also, it's very clear that the amount of baloney that has been put forward to the public by the military spokesman, whether it's about the tunnels, whether it's about 40 children being beheaded, and multiple other lies. Because, of course, the Israeli, the Zionist entity, has something called Hezbollah, which is really to lie continuously so that the propaganda that they are sort of giving to the general public is not debunked. But, you know, with the grace of God, over the last few days, over the last 60 days, ordinary people have been very clearly showing the flagrant lies that are being put forward by the Zionist entity.
Okay. Well, one of the more alarming things amongst many that has come out and has been revealed in the past week and confirmed, alayhi salam, are the concerns about organ theft by Israeli soldiers, as if things weren't going to get bad enough in terms of this scenario that we're laying out here. And this is something that, in the rap sheet of Israel, so to speak, they've been accused of it before. A Euromed Human Rights Monitor has mentioned it, amongst many other sources, that they have stolen organs from the dead bodies in Gaza. I mean, I don't know what else to say, but how low can one stoop to?
Yeah, I don't know what else to say either, other than this is something that's been a regular practice amongst not only in the Zionist entity, but a kind among the international Zionist network, among the various Zionist mafias in the United States have routinely been arrested for organ theft and stealing organs from illegitimately from those who obviously did not sign up for any kind of state-run organ donation program. So this is not anything new, and it's only just goes to show the gullibility of some aspects of Western audiences, is that these are supposed to be the so-called chosen people of God. They claim that that God is a racist and he only loves one race and everybody else is subhuman, and that's supposed to justify all these crimes. This is totally contrary to anything of what the prophets of God taught, which is that all human beings are creation of God and all human beings have equal chance towards salvation, and that they should act righteously. And stealing organs from dead bodies whom you have murdered, forget it, the first crime. The second crime after that is the stealing the organs as a result of the first crime. So this is totally something that people who claim to be of God, but that this God gives them a land to, it's totally flying in the face of anything that a human being with a spark of humanity left in their heart to resonate with. And this is only showing the true face of the Zionist entity for what it is, which is actually totally opposite of anything divine, totally opposite of anything godly and righteous, and is the biggest terrorist regime on the face of the earth.
The Al-Ahli Hospital incident, if you recall, Shabir Rizvi, where you had hundreds of Palestinians that were killed. We've been running this soundbite from one of the physicians at the hospital in terms of the Human Rights Watch report that didn't interview any of the, spectators there or the people to compile a report. Aside from that, one of the things that this physician said was that he had not seen the type of wounds that are usually customary from shrapnel on the bodies, where it was not usually shrapnel from a missile that explodes carries dirt or soil from the ground. This did not have that, which gives the idea that this missile, when it exploded, the shrapnel just went directly into the and pierced the bodies. Sorry to sound so graphic. The reason why I'm saying this is that 99.9% this is provided weapons and missiles by the U.S., most likely. The role of the U.S. here is becoming rather prominent. And even within the U.S., we know the Leahy Act doesn't allow regimes to use these types of weapons. They have to actually be vetted. But Israel has carte blanche. Why is the U.S. providing Israel these types of weapons when it comes out and says to Israel, please try to be careful not to kill civilians?
Well, look, at the end of the day, the support that the Zionist entity gets from Washington, and it's not new. Obviously, it has been continuous for the last 75 years. And Mr. Biden, way back in 87 or whatever, the clip that has been available on social media when he said that if Israel wasn't there, we would have had to create it. So obviously, it's a colonial racist enterprise which has been implanted in West Asia for the last 75 years to control the resources. Very simple, nothing complicated, nothing sort of requiring any evidence to sort of understand the situation. The reality is that Israel is there because it's the last colonial, racist, imperialist project, because European countries, which used to dominate Africa, South America, Asia, and Far East, they have had to leave those countries which they had occupied, whether it was through war or otherwise. Now, this is the last bastion of that particular enterprise. And I think the USA will do whatever is required to manage and have that foothold as long as possible. Of course, the reality is that they will have to leave that part of West Asia in due course, but they want to create as much mayhem, murder, and death as possible. Because really, what I think the USA is trying to show is that anyone who stands up against the hegemon will murder will be inflicted on them. But Gaza has actually become a metaphor globally for resistance. Gaza has become a metaphor for freedom. Gaza has become a metaphor for resilience. Gaza has become a metaphor for justice. Gaza has become a metaphor for all that is good and wholesome. And I think the defeat of the hegemon in this battle will actually liberate all the indigenous people all over the world. So it's a moment of crucible that is taking place at this moment, whereby the victory for the resistance will liberate everyone all over the world.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, I think there's a victory that's made when it comes to the information war, which I want to ask you when I get back to you, Shabir Rizvi, but I want to ask about the victory on the ground, if possible, Ali, and that is the fact that, for example, the Izzedine Al-Qassam Brigade said they have destroyed 25 of these military vehicles, which amounts to maybe hundreds of these tanks to have been destroyed, along with the fact one incident in the past 24, 48 hours where 60 Israeli regime forces were taken out, and many more Israeli regime forces have been taken out in this war. It does show that there is a victory in these instances by the Hamas resistance fighters. Israel, of course, doesn't want to report the truth when it comes to how many forces they've lost, but they are not winning convincingly as they thought that they would. What do you think about the way that the resistance forces are advancing on the ground?
The amount of attacks just from the north alone from Hezbollah has been unprecedented and has been increasing perhaps even before the so-called humanitarian pause in which the Zionist regime broke so many clauses and articles within that fragile truce. And as you mentioned, they don't even mention how much soldiers of the occupation army that they've lost either as deaths or injuries under strict military gag orders, because they don't want to be humiliated. They don't want to show the real farce of their so-called military superiority, that they have nuclear weapons, they have AI technology, as you mentioned, AI technology to be able to slaughter innocent people and take out revenge, but bloodlust and all these kinds of sadistic tactics may satisfy their twisted satanic mindset. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't achieve them any kind of military goals. It doesn't take out any aspects of the resistance's leadership. So this terrorist regime is being dealt with properly, and it is being given the blood of these martyrs shall not be wasted. And so the Zionist occupation army is definitely being humiliated. And when we find out the real numbers, perhaps later in time, we'll find out just how humiliating this defeat is for them.
Well, they have to be humiliated enough to understand, in one sense, Shabbat Rissi, when I talked about the victory of the information war, where all these Western media conglomerates with all the money and the Zionist influence and the lobbies could not win the information war when it came out to this huge protests that have happened weekly and almost daily in some countries against Israel. How much of a loss has Israel experienced in terms of its image, along with the U.S., I must say, when it comes to the information war?
Well, look, we have reached a stage of from hubris to humiliation, I think, as far as the global media war is concerned, or the support for the Palestinian right for defending itself, resisting the occupation army. Statistics and records have been sort of compiled by people saying that globally 95% demonstrations that have taken place have been in support of the Palestinian people and against the Zionist entity. And what's also remarkable is that a lot of young Jews, learned Jews, academics, multiple people, whether it's sort of Norman Finkelstein or Ilan Pappe and many other Jews who have come out saying that this Zionist entity is really committing a crime. I think only yesterday I was looking through some sort of figures as to what kind of media support that the Palestinian cause is taking. Apparently, over 98 billion people globally, that's more than the global population, you must remember, on Twitter are supporting hashtag Free Palestine. The similar sort of figures are available, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, and other sort of social media. Even though regularly people who support the Palestinian cause, either they're sort of cancelled or their accounts are closed. But nonetheless, there is a huge sort of army of unpaid people. And I say unpaid because you've got to remember that the Zionist entity spends millions and perhaps even billions of dollars over the years to sort of hoodwink the people with the lies. And of course, the sort of legacy media continues to sort of support the lies that the Zionist entity put forward. But nonetheless, the ordinary people are doing a remarkable job through social media to make people aware the crimes that the Zionist entity is committing, not only after 7th of October, but for the last 75 years.
Sure. Well, one of the things that is happening, AIPAC, which I'm sure you heard of, Ali, has actually is reported to have $100 million that it's spending and proposing for different members of Congress in order to basically purge the anti-Israeli sentiment out of that. And there you have about eight or nine of them, I believe, in what is called this PAC, where they want to purge the ones like Rashida Tlaib and others. And they're even willing to pay different candidates to run against them in the millions of dollars. So that is a direct sign that they are worried about the anti-Israeli sentiment when it's happening inside of a Congress. Do you think that, therefore, there is a chance that we're looking at the U.S. from within, putting aside Joe Biden, I must say, that the sentiment may be changing there?
It's interesting to note that AIPAC was originally slated to be registered as a foreign agent or an organization similar to AIPAC. I'm not sure. It was during the time of John F. Kennedy, President John F. Kennedy. And that was one of the moves that he was making. Also, behind the scenes, he was working to control Israel's nuclear weapons program and then Prime Minister Ben Gurion resigned in embarrassment due to the behind-the-scenes pressure leveraged by President John F. Kennedy. And then we all know what happened to him afterwards. And it's very clear that the Zionist network, through various mafia figures like Meyer Lansky, were instrumental, although perhaps not 100% alone, but instrumental in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. So it just goes to show how powerful this lobby is. And when it comes to their current activities in trying to outseat certain members of Congress, we have to remember that Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and all these people, they are not even that anti-Zionist. The several members of the so-called squad signed voted yes on a piece of legislation that would equate being anti-Zionist to being anti-Semitic. And even Rashida Tlaib has condemned Palestinian resistance or some other very improper statements, which just goes to show that even they don't tolerate liberal Zionism. They don't tolerate this kind of watered-down, we'll support the Palestinians as long as they're perpetually victimized and that they have no chance of winning. They don't even support that. They want just down the line, hardcore Zionism, not even this deceptive smiley face type Zionism. They don't even want their sellout puppets who, no matter how much Ilhan Omar tries to shine the shoes of the various evil powers and special interests with the United States, they still want to throw them out. So this goes to show how they really are kind of all or nothing political lobby. And they're very vicious even towards people who would end up fulfilling their goals through more liberal means. So the American people really need to have a independent electoral process and elect more independent politicians like this politician Thomas Massie, who recently got in trouble for saying that American politicians care more about Zionism than they do about internal American issues. So it's probably one of the worst special interest groups,
sure.
And it's definitely at the detriment of the American people themselves.
Final question goes to you there, Shabir Rizvi. You have this, I'm not too sure what kind of politician you'd like to call him, but he is a U.S. Senator, Lindsey Graham, where in an interview weeks ago, he said that, quote, there is no limit to the amount of Palestinian deaths that would make him question the support for Israel. Israeli officials have come out and said this operation, we call the onslaught on Gaza, will take another 2 months. What do you think is going to happen at the end of the 2 months when these death tolls are going to obviously multiply?
Well, look, Lindsey Graham is one of those nasty characters in the American politics, whether it's what's happening in Gaza, China, or Ukraine. He is absolutely a disgusting individual. But of course, you know, that's how many of the Congress and senators are in the USA. But I think what we have got to remember is that, you know, people have been talking about what's going to happen day after.
I should have asked this question earlier because we're just fresh out of time. I do apologize, Shabir Rizvi. Sorry for that. But we'll be covering this topic again. I'm sure you'll be on another program. Shabir Rizvi, their political analyst from London. Thank you. Ali Salam, thank you. A pleasure to see you. Editor-in-Chief of the Basira Press from Tehran. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tatway and the team, it's goodbye.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. Well, this is Asma once more at your service as the host. And then here we have two very dear guests. Assalamu alaikum, brothers.
Alaykum as-salam.
Alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullah.
So, as the ritual of this program, I would like you to introduce yourself very much briefly.
Yeah, I'm Ali and I'm from India and I'm a student in the holy city of Qom.
Thank you.
And I'm Sayyid Mustafa and I'm also a student here. I'm actually learning psychology here in Hawza. And I've lived in different parts of the world. Originally, I'm from Pakistan.
Thank you very much, both of you, for coming here and for being a part of Back to Reality.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So we all have witnessed this very issue, that there are some people who are kind and there are some others who would seek that kindness. They are kind of people who would never share any kindness with other people, but they would ask a lot of kindness from others. They are just, let's call them kindness seekers, but they're not going to share kindness. So there must be a difference between these two people, which is technically very clear, because the kind people are pretty much clear and the kindness seekers are also clear as well. So have you ever witnessed such a thing?
Do you have
such an experience?
Of course, I've probably done it myself, if I were to be honest. But I think a lot of this has to do with, by the way, with personality types. Mm-hmm. Like if you study,
yeah, exactly.
If you study psychology, you will realize, for example, they'll talk about people that are introverted, people that are extroverted. In the same way, there
are they kindness seekers?
It depends, right? For example, there's a very, very popular psychology test called the Kettle 16 Factors Personality Test, mm-hmm. which looks at these kind of things. For example, it looks at whether a person is aggressive or they're passive. For example, is a person agreeable or they're disagreeable? Whether the person is open to new experiences or they're closed. So I think this has a lot to do with personality types. But that doesn't mean that it can't be changed, or a person can learn new habits, or, you know, this habit can be changed through learning. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on it?
If we talk about the kindness seekers, so like they're the people, they don't want to do anything. They just want to gain, gain interest and gain their personal interests. So they just, you know, they're after looking empathy.
Let's get something clear. As human beings, we all are in need of kindness. Mm-hmm. We all are sort of kindness seekers. But then we're talking about that extremist point of view in which people are so selfish in a way that they do not want that kindness for other people, but they want to get that much of kindness from everybody around.
That's selfishness, right? Like, and even, you know, wanting kindness is not a bad thing in itself.
Yeah, exactly.
But you should be qualified to have that, you know, get kindness from people.
And then you must be sharing that kindness that you expect others to be share with you.
It's just like respect, right?
Yeah.
We want to be respected. We should be respected. It's every human.
A mutual thing.
It's every human's right to be respected. Mm-hmm. I think it's our right to receive kindness and give kindness to others. But if we become one-sided in it, I think that's the issue, right?
Yeah,
if
that's the problem. To be always the one who gets the kindness, not to be the one who gives the kindness.
That's arrogant. That's being arrogant. That's kind of rude.
What I would say is that I think people that are kind also receive kindness, right? It's a formula.
Yeah.
Right? So let's say, so if you want to...
Not necessarily, actually.
Huh? Well, yes, that's true. Not necessarily.
Could
be kind and get a lot of rudeness or in response.
Yeah,
but generally, among our own peers and among our own loved ones, I would say that's a golden rule. Like, give respect.
If you're kind, you're supposed to get kindness back.
Supposed.
That's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
You don't get it back. The world is such a place.
Yeah.
But again,
see, the world has changed and people do not answer you the way you just talk to them. Sometimes you're kind, but people would misunderstand that kindness, and then the way they're going to answer you is just to stab you in the back without you even knowing that. So just as I said, not necessarily the answer to kindness is kindness.
Well, it depends, right? What I was trying to say is that, yes, of course, if someone is being mean to you or they're being rude or you're, you know, they're stealing from you, whatever, they're doing something wrong to you, no one's saying you have to be very kind to them. Obviously, I was just talking about in general terms. Let's say if I'm with my family members, if I'm with my friends, if I'm with people in school, people that are around me, if I am kind towards them, they'll be kind towards me, right? Are we going for a break?
So the people-pleasing people have expectations from others, but the kind people do that usually out of their nature. They're instinctively kind. So if we come to kindness, again, there might be different branches to kind people.
Yeah, the kind person, if we can define them as, they're genuinely kind and they're empathy. They're not kind
by nature.
They're kind by nature and they're not kind to gain something in return.
By any expectations.
It is how they are.
Yeah.
But the people pleasing type of person, he is kind. Because he's got his own personal interest.
Exactly, that's
the point. He wants something in return. So that's actually, you know, false kindness that we see from him.
Yeah, so there are a lot of ways to differentiate a kind person from a people-pleasing person. But then let's go for a short break and then we'll be back. Welcome back. We are talking about kindness, different types of kindness, after we've been through those kindness seeker people. So, we were talking about people pleasing people and how to differentiate between a kind person and a person who's kind with some intentions, with expectations.
I was just saying that even if a person is pretending to be kind, is better than a person who's actually just like a mean or horrible person.
No, I'd rather be interacting with people who are mean, but they're not kind with me for special reasons.
I'm not saying they have to have a special reason. What I mean is that,
like, they expect you to I don't know. They have some expectations that may not be in accordance with your idea.
There's actually, like, different opinions, what brother said. You know, when you're mean, like, it's like, you know, you're truthful, but you're mean.
Right.
But when you're pretending to be, you're actually, you know, appearing to be nice, but
you're mean.
No, but you're lying.
Right, yeah. You're being deceptive.
Yeah, you're being deceptive, but like, you're pretending to be nice.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It depends on the situation as well, right?
Exactly.
I think one root cause, I think, of someone who's like a people pleaser who does things with selfish reason is low self-esteem sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these people don't have enough confidence in themselves to, you know, they feel they're lacking something and it needs to be fulfilled through someone else, right? They need to please someone else.
Exactly.
They need to gain their favor.
Yeah, they feel such a void that has to be filled by people's, you know, being satisfied with them.
Yeah, and it can unfortunately lead to disastrous consequences for those kind of people.
Exactly.
They're, you know, sometimes they're not happy with themselves. Others aren't happy with them. So I would definitely say if someone has this issue, they should go and deal with it. Like, don't let it become something bigger in your life.
Because it would turn into different traumas, because people are not there to always be satisfied with whatever you do. And then if you're doing everything, if you're sharing kindness just because you expect others to have a special sort of perspective about you, then that's the wrong way of living.
You're just being fake, right?
Yeah.
It's actually hypocrisy.
Exactly.
So you're just pretending to be some kind of person you're actually not.
Yeah. And then in the end, it would bother you yourself.
And
eventually, yeah.
It impacts your entire life in the sense that these kind of people have higher stress levels.
Mm-hmm.
They're less at peace. They may make poorer decisions in their lives, you know, because their thinking is being affected by this sort of worldview.
They do not tend to be truthful and nice. It doesn't happen at the same time, mostly.
Yeah, as we've discussed, there's so many factors into it. One of them is being selfish and trying to have an upper hand in things. And I don't know if you guys have studied game theory.
Or even manipulating people. You see, you're doing this because you know that if you do this, then people have to pay you back.
Right.
And then you would use that card against them.
Or you're expecting favors from others, right?
Yeah, very true.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Then there's a question. Do you think that we are born with such traits or no? We get it from the environment.
That is a great, great question. And there's actually been a big psychological study done about this. I don't know if I should go into like huge details about it, and I don't remember the name of the research, but it's actually, I do remember. It's called object-oriented psychology, and I think one of the people behind it was Anna Freud, the daughter of the Freud.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is actually a very interesting theory, and the theory says that one of the first thing that a child comes into, a baby, once they're born, they interact with the mother, right? That's their first thing. And the first thing that they interact with is with the milk that they get from the mother. And she says that, or they say that during that time, if the child receives like milk and proper love and care from the mother, they will create a worldview of themselves and others, right? So they will think that they're good and the world's good. And in that case, that person will grow up to actually be a very positive person in society, right? They will, they'll, but in every other scenario, if they start thinking that they're bad and the world's good, then they have this sense of inferiority in them as they grow up. Like they become dependent on others and they become these kind of sort of affectionate sort of people. If they
it's an unconscious sort of thing.
It's not like, for example, let's say they don't get the right amount of milk. They don't, or the mom doesn't love them properly, or, you know, it could be a number of issues. You have to go and look at it. It can lead to that sort of, let's say the parents are fighting and the child sees that, it can lead to, oh, the world's bad, right? Even a small baby can feel those emotions. So this has so much to do with the way we think about ourselves and the world. It's not such a simple topic, I think.
Exactly, yeah. So technically, it's not the thing we have been born with. It's something that we would get as a trait from the environment, and it could work like a reaction to what... It's a self-mechanism, I suppose.
Yeah, and there's so many other factors that could go into it. It could be an experience you had in school. It could be something your parents said. It could be your elder siblings, the way they treat you. So it could be so many things
but
in life.
But it's a dangerous game, again, because I've seen such people.
It's kind of natural for a human being that sometimes when he has to gain something, he pretends. You know, he can do anything to gain something, right? So even when he's pretending to be kind, he's doing it for a reason. So... this is actually, you know, kind of in the nature of human being that he pretends sometimes.
Yeah, and when I was saying it's better to be kind sometimes than pretending was maybe, let's say, in the context of siblings, you know, it's something we learn is that unless you have a fight with a sibling, you're going to pretend to be nice to them sometimes to sort of make... It's not always bad. Like, sometimes you have to pretend to be nice, even if you're not feeling that way.
It all depends on the cause, right?
Eventually, one day you're going to show them that you're not satisfied with them. See, I'm saying that it's better to pour it out at the moment than to keep it in yourself.
That's what causes the fight to begin with then.
Okay, the fight is better than keeping grudge inside yourself.
Again, it depends on the situation.
No, actually, the brother, like earlier, a few minutes earlier, mentioned a good point. When I said that, you know, it also depends upon the second person, like he, how he wants. You know, when if I do something wrong, so you come and stop me, right? So you can either be like truthful and rude to me, or you can be, you know, you pretend to be nice. Oh, it's no worries. You're all right. You're doing good. But actually, why just these two options?
Yeah.
You can be truthful to me, but in a nicer way.
Yeah.
People need to practice this.
Another word I would bring in is respectful. Like sometimes we can be like confrontational, or we can argue with people, but we can do it in a respectful way.
Exactly. Now you're talking.
It doesn't have to be kindness or like being, but it doesn't also mean you have to be rude, right?
Yes.
But I do think we should always maintain respect with...
This is actually a skill.
It's a skill to be, you know, to be respectful, to be nice and just deliver your message.
Yeah. So I would, that would be a word that I would
end. So you don't have to be people pleasing. You can say your words in a respectful manner and at the same time gain people's hearts. So you don't have to be... such a person with two face. So we have to work on it to just change ourselves into a better version of ourselves. Thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al Alameen, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi. Let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alameen, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi. Let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again. Thank you.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The heads of key religio-political parties and top clerics took part in a national conference titled Security of Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Responsibility of Muslims in the Pakistani capital Islamabad on Wednesday. In a collective stance, the heads of religious groups and leaders of political parties designated December 8th as the National Day of Protection of Al-Aqsa Mosque, during which they intend to stage nationwide protests to denounce Israel's massacres in Gaza. With the primary objective of tackling security concerns surrounding Al-Aqsa Mosque, the conference has highlighted the importance of preserving the sanctity of this holy site, acknowledging its significance for Muslims worldwide.
We want to tell our government, along with the leaders of Islamic states, that we will not allow anyone to recognize Israel as a legitimate state. The people of the US and the UK have expressed their support for Palestine by holding historic mass protests against Israel's barbarism in Gaza. If the West respects democracy and public opinion, they should immediately withdraw their support from Israel.
The participants in the event united in their condemnation of the Israeli aggression on Gaza, underscoring a shared commitment to find diplomatic solutions to the long-standing conflict.
The genocide of Palestinians in Gaza is being carried out on a daily basis. The US and Israel are directly responsible for this mass killing. The streets of Gaza will be turned into a graveyard for the Zionist regime in the near future.
Speakers at the conference have referred to massive civilian casualties, infrastructure damage, and the overall humanitarian crisis in the region.
Nobody was watching the atrocities which were being committed before this also. State terrorism. I think it is never seen before in the history of the world. I would go back to Germany, and maybe it is worse than that, because this kind of bombing was not seen anywhere in the world.
The participants at the conference not only reaffirmed their unwavering commitment to safeguarding the sanctity of Al-Aqsa Mosque, but also made it clear that they are determined to intensify efforts aimed at achieving a complete halt to Israel's aggressive actions in Gaza. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
The Islamic Radios and Television Union held a conference in Beirut to denounce the killing of journalists in Palestine and Lebanon and to voice support for the Palestinian people and resistance. The speakers all stressed that the battle of the media is complementary to that of the resistance.
Our media battle is decisive. It began as a very brutal war against us when they tried to portray Hamas as Daesh or ISIS. They slammed any act of resistance against Israel as an aggression and propagated the idea that Hamas kills children and rapes women, and then they tried to sell them to the world. But with God's help and our steadfastness and the strength of our media, their campaign has backfired, and we now see the support of the people in all capitals of the world for Palestine.
The conference also included videos of the correspondents on the field in Gaza, who have transcended all borders and, despite the misinformation campaign, conveyed the truth to the rest of the world.
The resistance media has succeeded despite its limited capacity, since it is always dependent on the truth. The theory attributed to a former German foreign minister is that if you keep repeating a lie, others will eventually believe it. Such a theory could have been possible during a period in history when there was no awareness or knowledge or technology. But today, everyone can recognize the truth. Look where the lies of the U.S. and Israeli have gotten them. The most important power we have now is the truth.
Influential figures and experts stress that the next phase is pivotal, and that the alternative media need to work on promoting the narrative of the free people of the world on a global scale.
The Israeli regime was too late to notice that the resistance was able to let its narrative be heard. And I can tell you with all certainty, and despite all the misinformation and deception practiced for over a month and a half, that the narrative of the resistance and its media has been established. What's important now is how to preserve it. Now this narrative is strong and has spread across the world, but we need to maintain it. I believe the world is now ready to listen, to look and ponder on the other point of view and the other side of the story. We need to think about what is the discourse that we need to present to the world, what are its terminology and its context. This is part of the meetings and plans for the next phase. That is why it is pivotal to hold such conferences.
Israel has killed over 60 journalists, including female reporters in Gaza and three in southern Lebanon.
Israel has attempted to portray itself as an entity trying to defend itself. Yet the journalists who have put their lives in the line of fire in Gaza have debunked these claims and have shown that it is the Palestinian people who have the right to defend themselves. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
As the situation continues to evolve in Gaza, the voices of African Muslims join the global call for an end to the Israeli occupation of Palestine. In the country's capital, Kabul, the majority of people is outraged by the Israeli war crimes in Gaza and sympathize with Palestinians.
We Muslims are obliged to support Palestine and its people. We should specify where we stand and stay beside Palestinians. Look at the evil gathered behind Israel, massacring our Muslim brothers and sisters. Muslims should be united and stand behind each other.
Some Afghans compare their miseries with the plight of Gazans in two areas. First is the U.S. complicity in both crises, and second is women and children bearing the brunt of aggressions.
Afghans best relate to the suffering and plights of Gazans and Palestinians. If they are under the Israeli occupation, we also went through years of the U.S. invasion. Our houses were destroyed and our relatives were bombarded. Millions of people were displaced and disabled. The same thing is underway in Palestine. Unfortunately, in such situations, children and women are hit hardest.
Meanwhile, Afghan experts urged Islamic governments and the Taliban authorities to do more to help their Palestinian brothers in the face of Israeli brutalities.
Islamic countries could support Gaza and the cause of Palestine militarily. They could send hardware and equipment to Gazans to defend themselves. Islamic nations should cut all their diplomatic ties with Israel. Unfortunately, however, some Arab countries have or are planning to normalize relations with Israel. There should also be public attention and support for Palestine led by Islamic bodies and nations.
Afghans have used every opportunity and stage to express their anger over Israel and show support for oppressed Gazans. People in Afghanistan are outraged over Israel's war crimes in Gaza. They have called on the international community to put an end to the deadly occupation of Palestine. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The foreign ministers of the five Caspian Sea littoral countries decided to create a council for dialogue without intermediaries during an annual meeting that took place in Moscow. The foreign ministers of Russia, Iran, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, and Turkmenistan took part in it. Iranian foreign minister approved the creation of a new unified organization in the Caspian region and stated that the organization will be able to exercise control over all areas of cooperation in the Caspian Sea region. According to Hossein Amir Abdollahian, the region is a strategic connecting link of the north-south and east-west corridors.
In order to transform the Caspian Sea into a symbol of friendship, progress and development, we need to further strengthen collective interaction and cooperation. We have no other choice but to move forward along the path of institutionalizing and structuring cooperation in the Caspian Sea.
Opportunities for developing cooperation in various areas, including security in the Caspian region, expanding economic ties, maritime transport, trade, energy, environment, as well as related legal issues, were discussed in the meeting. Also, Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov and his Iranian counterpart signed a declaration on countering unilateral sanctions. Lavrov indicated that the document will strengthen cooperation between Iran and Russia in the fight against illegal restriction. It means that any state that has caused losses and damage to individuals, legal entities, and states through unilateral sanctions is responsible for compensation.
Of course, this is an important step in increasing the coordination of efforts of members of the world community to overcome illegal sanctions, which the United States and its allies have made a substitute for diplomacy.
Today, we signed a joint declaration on opposing American unilateral actions, reducing them, as well as unilateral measures taken by the U.S. in general. Today, we have a very good opportunity to go over the agreements reached by our heads of state and discuss the bilateral agenda. We are very pleased to use the diplomacy of our heads of state in the context of diplomacy. We always benefit from that.
Russia is the initiator of the format of the Caspian Council. Currently, this region is being put forward as a key region in terms of building new trade and logistics schemes as well as security.
Last year, representatives of the Caspian states at a summit in Ashgabat reaffirmed that they would not provide their territories to other states to commit aggression or military actions against any of the coastal countries. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Held to coincide with the 10th anniversary of the demise of South African anti-apartheid icon Nelson Mandela, the 5th Convention of Solidarity with Palestine reiterated the right to resist, as struggles globally have proved the effectiveness of a multi-pronged approach to confront oppression and the colonial project.
From the river to the sea!
Hosted by Mandla Mandela, the grandson of Nelson Mandela, he recalled how his grandfather galvanized the support of frontline African states to support an effective resistance against the apartheid regime. He noted that Arab countries must adopt a similar position and shoulder their responsibility. The conference also heard that Mandela himself was called a terrorist when he resisted oppression.
He also raised arms for the African National Congress. We therefore call on each and everyone in this conference to ensure that you adopt Nelson Mandela's way. Go to your countries, mobilize resources, mobilize arms for the Palestinian resistance to effectively wage their struggle so that we can defeat the brutal apartheid regime of Israel.
Attended by a spectrum of movements from around the world, the conference considered the role of all spheres of society in activating awareness. In South Africa, for example, women and youth proved cornerstones of the resistance, often paving the way. But their cries and resolute steadfastness were heard and seen, which resulted in a global mobilization to act. Something participants say Arab countries have failed so far.
When I talk to you, I talk more in pain than in anger. We would have expected some Islamic countries who would say that they support the Palestinian cause to cut relations with the Israelis, as did South Africa, who is not an Islamic, not an Arabic country. Why they don't cut the relations with the Israelis? Why they continue to have trade with the Israelis up till now? Why? if they really have a position to say, to tell us, our people, go and make actions. We don't want to hear words.
South Africa's former intelligence minister, Ronnie Castrels, described America as the number one enemy of humanity and the key player behind the genocide in Gaza. To overcome Israel, therefore, is to confront the colonial project, racism and oppression. The discussion panels held at the conference focused on three critical areas: civil society, media, and the international system. If used correctly, these domains can ensure that accurate information is conveyed and pressure is applied, leading to international bodies being able to take action to prosecute those guilty of atrocities in Palestine. Hassan Siriep, Johannesburg.
The northwestern tribal regions of Pakistan, known for their strong community bonds and historical resistance, witnessed an outpouring of support for the people of Palestine. Many rallies saw participants hailing from diverse backgrounds within the region, transcending ethnic and cultural differences to stand in unity with the Palestinian cause.
From north to south, Pakistanis stand with the people of Palestine. This is the land of people who always stand with the oppressed. The war on Gaza has exposed the real face of Israel and its top supporter, the U.S. This genocide has proved that Israel is a cruel and illegitimate regime.
Protesters urge the global community to take a stand against the indiscriminate bombing of Gaza, the displacement of families, and the overall human rights abuses inflicted upon the Palestinian nation.
Right and wrong ki jang keh raha hun.
This is a battle of right versus wrong. People of the world are standing with the oppressed people of Palestine. But leaders of the Arab Islamic states are silent and siding with the U.S., which I believe is against humanity.
Local leaders, activists, and religious figures addressed the crowds, emphasizing the need for international intervention to halt the violence and hold Israel accountable for its actions in Gaza.
They are declaring their support for innocent Palestinians. They are declaring that Israel is committing the war crimes. Israel is committing a genocide in the Gaza. And what is happening is there. We cannot stay aloof from that. We are the part of not only humanitarian grounds, but we are part of an Islamic community. We are part of the Palestinian cause.
The multifaceted response from Pakistan by blending public demonstrations and economic actions against Israel's atrocities in Gaza highlights the deeply rooted emotional connection that many Pakistanis feel with the Palestinian struggle for self-determination. Nasir Kazmi, Kohar District of Northwestern Pakistan.
Hundreds of protesters amassed outside of the White House over the weekend.
Plain and simple, it's a genocide. Over 20,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli bombs.
And protesters are concerned that the numbers of the dead will grow. They railed against the recent Israeli offensive against Palestinians in Gaza, crowding Lafayette Park and surrounding areas.
I think every day about the children in jail. They're the children in indefinite detention who don't get trials, who can't talk to their parents. That is probably the thing that breaks my heart the most.
The demonstration comes after a temporary ceasefire ended and the Israeli military resumed its ground operations against Gazans.
The White House has become a constant backdrop for those who are upset over the constant bombardment over Gaza as the death toll rises. Protesters say there are many who are conflating Zionism with Judaism, but they say there's a major difference, and they're urging President Biden to change his relationship with Israeli leaders.
Directly in front of the White House, others gathered for a die-in, lying on the ground, pretending to be dead, calling attention to the thousands of lives lost in Gaza.
we actually are massively proud and happy of the fact that we have so many Jewish Americans that have been joining us, including many that are laying their bodies on the ground right now behind me.
Health Ministry officials in Gaza report that Israeli attacks have killed more than 15,000 Palestinians in Gaza since the beginning of October. Over 190 Palestinians have died since a truce expired on Friday.
And literally, we've had politicians in front of the Capitol the other day tell me, well, they deserved it. I turned around to one of the congressmen and I said, how did a one-year-old child deserve it? And he literally shrugged his shoulders and walked off.
Demonstrators say they'll continue to protest over what they call U.S. support for war.